It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Whether you're a duck or whether you're a beaver, your fantasy team needs a new receiver. It's Danny and Dusty at lunchtime every day. Maybe you're a tortured fan of Rip City. Danny and Dusty are here to take pity, hoping there's not a center with bad knees on the way. Talking noon till 3, Danny and Dusty on the Fan. Yep, I'm singing again, cause they haven't said I can't. Danny and Dusty love the teams the rest of us revile. Raising a Blazers banner would make it all worthwhile. Noon till 3.
An Odyssey station.
Hour number 3 here on a Monday afternoon on Danny and Dusty. Whether you're listening on 1080 AM, watching along on YouTube.com/1080AM The Fam, or twitch.tv/1080AM The Fam. We appreciate you. We love you. Thank you for hanging out with us.
Thank you, party animals.
The sun is back out, and we're back on, and it's the third hour heading into college football week, which means it is time to resume our bracket showdown for the best rivalry trophies in all of college football. We wrapped up Friday with
so good.
With some bangers. And ladies and gentlemen, we have upsets.
We
have upsets. Upsets we're had. Our first matchup featured the Floyd of Rosedale of Iowa, Minnesota against the old brass platoon of Michigan State, Indiana. Floyd of Rosedale has walked away with this with a 69% win.
Whoa! Nice. That's what I'm talking about. It's got hate in its heart.
It's a pig in a blanket.
It is a fantastic trophy. I love it.
A closer matchup.
Racist governor.
That's true. Between the Shillelagh of Notre Dame Purdue, not the jeweled Shillelagh, and the Stanford Axe of Stanford Cal, 56-44 in favor of the Shillelagh.
Wow.
It's a shellacking.
A shillelagh shellacking,
hey,
as some would say.
Between the Seminole War Canoe and the Golden Hat of Texas, Oklahoma.
Come on. Do right by the people.
The Seminole War Canoe moves on.
That is ridiculous.
The Golden Hat and
what
the...
What is wrong with you
and
people?
And the Polished Spurs have both been upset.
Yeah, and this one wasn't as close as I thought it would be.
56-44, the War Canoe wins.
Golly.
You disgusting animals, you picked the Platy over the Commander's Trophy.
Well, regional bias.
73-27.
Don't look at me. I supported the troops on this.
Disgusting.
The rivalry deserves a better trophy than the Platypus Trophy. Originality, it's an A. Execution, it's a C-.
Yeah.
Below average. It is average and below.
Season get degrees,
but it moves
though.
On. It moves on.
All right, our matchups today feature the Ram Falcon Trophy of Air Force Colorado State against the Cyhawk Trophy. It's the animals against each other.
That should be the winner. The Ram Falcon should be the winner of this. The Cyhawk Trophy is not as bad as it once was.
Still not good.
The Ram Falcon is still pretty awesome. You have a Ram and a Falcon fighting each other. That's badass. And I believe it's on... It's made of rock, right? From the Rocky Mountains?
Yes.
There we go. That's awesome.
The next matchup is a Big Ten showdown. Ooh. Notre Dame Michigan State Megaphone Trophy up against the Land of Lincoln of Illinois and Northwestern.
Look, Megaphone got through because it was in a favorable matchup in the first round. It should lose to the Land of Lincoln. It's a bronze Lincoln hat. It's awesome.
Does it have a bullet hole in it?
Wow. No, because he'd still be alive if they shot his hat.
Well, I mean, it goes through.
I think he took his hat off because he was a...
problem.
He was a man of culture.
You see, if he would have had his hat on, maybe he would have aimed higher.
He was a man of culture, so he took his hat off indoors.
Someone else who never took their hat off, Paul Bunyan, Michigan State, up against the bones of Memphis UAB.
This is a big matchup. This is an elite matchup. We've got, I don't want to say 2-1 seeds, but 2-2 seeds, plucky 2 seeds going up against each other in the round of 32. I'm voting for the Ribs because it gives you an A for originality.
I mean, it is a bronzed rack of ribs.
And it's an A in execution. It looks phenomenal. It's
fantastic.
And Memphis and UAB don't have a lot to play for. This trophy is worthy of them playing for all the marks.
How this isn't sponsored by a rib restaurant, one in Memphis.
Ooh.
And one in Alabama, or in Birmingham.
Yeah. Or just cover them both, you know, the old, I want my baby back.
Oh, chilies. I don't think that's in their budget anymore.
Yeah, they broke. Also, you know what I'm saying? Those are baby backs. These are full-on porks.
Whoop, whoop.
These babies are huge. And then our final matchup of the round of 32 features the Bell of Ohio Marshall up against the Jeweled Shillelagh of USC Notre Dame.
Boy, I'm going to go Jeweled Shillelagh here. Because the Bell was also another favorable matchup. It's just a bell mounted on a piece of wood.
Yeah.
It's not great. But you got history, tradition with the Jeweled Shillelagh, Notre Dame, USC. It's a hotly contested rivalry. They put on a jewel if USC wins, a jewel if Notre Dame wins. It is, because Notre Dame is a bunch of perverts, they've got a bunch of, it looks phallic in nature.
It's as phallic as it gets.
They play for two phallic-shaped rivalry trophies. I mean, get it together, Notre Dame. But I'm going Jeweled Shillelagh in that one. These are good matchups here. And this is why college football is great. We're going to start the round of 16 tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're going to get all of them done.
We're going to get them all done tomorrow. It'll be 8 matchups tomorrow.
Oh, and then we have the 4 on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Thursday, we have our championship round.
To unveil on Friday, going into college football opening weekend.
I'm excited. This has been a great exercise because we do know how much regional bias is put in place. But I'm going, the Seminole War Canoe beating the Golden Hat, I still can't get over that.
No Golden Hat, no Spurs.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
But a saddle survives.
Two of the best trophies. Like I was kind of hoping we'd have like the assortment to choose from. Like the saddle, the Spurs, the hat, and then like, you know, you need to throw like a... like a lasso. I think you can't because gun culture, but like some six shooters.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
let them play for a gun.
Some polished six
shooters.
Texas.
Yeah. Like, it's Texas.
How could that anybody be against that?
Yeah. All right. No. Well, I think a lot of people will be against it, but you're Texas. That's kind of what you do.
You do. You do barbecue and guns.
Yeah. That's right. You do.
Is Texas more synonymous for either of those two things?
No. Football.
But like, you're already football. So
football.
You're football, barbecue, guns.
Yeah, three.
And the basement at the Alamo.
That's right. Pee-wee's Great Adventure. That taught me that fall show.
That just has a different connotation nowadays.
Basement at the Alamo?
With Pee-wee.
Yeah. R.I.P. Paul Reubens.
Are we RIPing him?
Yeah, he's dead. I mean, just because that guy went into one of those movie theaters and did what I assume would happen in one of those movie theaters anyways.
Right.
You know?
We're going to crucify him for that?
I mean,
look, he had a bounce back. He was the hairdresser in Blow. Mm-hmm. He was Pee-wee again.
Yeah.
I mean, and probably just lived off the royalties from Pee-wee's Playhouse, which was a great show.
Look, outside of that one slip-up, you know, relatively controversy-free.
Boy, that would just be a blip on the radar these days. You know? That'd be just like, we'd be like, all right, moving on. You know, I've been Pee-wee Herman 3 times for Halloween in my life.
Yeah, you're not wrong, because what was the guy that was pulling it out on the Zoom conference?
The guy for The New Yorker.
CNN.
Jeffrey Toobin.
That's
Jeffrey
the one. Toobin. Yeah, he's back.
But both a surname and a verb, apparently, for when he's on a Zoom call.
Hey-o.
Hey-o.
Toobin it.
I see what you did there.
But yeah, he's back on TV. How?
Yes. He just, you know, he
how?
Served his time, I guess.
I feel like that's a lifetime ban.
Yeah, well.
Not anymore. See, this is what I'm saying. Pee-wee would have been, he would have gotten away with this. He was just 30 years behind his time.
All right, we're going to go dealer's choice here. You want to go baseball or you want to go college football?
Well, you know the answer is college football. I am in college football heaven, but we do have good baseball
stuff. We will get to the baseball stuff because there's some pretty interesting baseball stuff, as weird as that is this time of year. But we will keep it in the college football vein, taking a look at some of the most intriguing quarterback tiers and coaching tiers in college football. Danny Dustin, 10 of the Fan.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Do you like this music?
Yeah, love it.
Yeah?
Big fan of Trivium.
Trivium. Not a band that's playing this weekend, or anytime in the relative future, I don't think, here. But if you are a bit of a metalhead, Five Finger Death Punch. What would you rather have, a Five Finger Death Punch or a Death Pinch?
I think a Death Pinch. That seems like it would go faster, and it maybe would hurt less.
Slightly?
Yep, that's what I'm going with.
Okay.
Final answer.
All right, fine. If you want to win tickets, though, it is August 31st at RV InStyle Resorts Amphitheater. You can text in now, 503-864-6326, for your chance to win tickets to Five Finger Death Punch, as well as, I believe, Marilyn Manson.
Oh.
Which, speaking of people that were canceled.
That man, I
thought he
can't
was canceled.
Believe he's not I think he should probably still be canceled with things he was canceled for.
Interesting. Again, you can text PUNCH, P-U-N-C-H, to 503-864-6326 now to enter for your chance to win tickets to Five Finger Death Punch on August 31st at RV InStyle Resorts Amphitheater.
Let's go!
Head to 1080thefan.com for complete contest details. Again, that's PUNCH, P-U-N-C-H, to 503-864-6326, and a winner will be selected from that group.
Let's go!
You know who else is in town this weekend?
Who?
Monday night, a little me first in the Gimme Gimmies.
How many times have you seen him?
This will be my second time.
Is that it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought you had seen them more.
Nope, just once, a couple years ago. Hopefully this time I don't get COVID.
Hmm.
Oh, you got COVID last time?
Yeah.
Dang.
Worth it.
Okay.
Worth it. Worth it, huh?
Worth it.
All right.
All right, well, heading into the college football season, just a few days away, Chris Venditti and Bruce Feldman of The Athletic dove in and tried for the third consecutive year to rank the FBS division head coaches in tiers.
Okay, and I like this.
I do, too, because I think it does kind of encapsulate a couple different things that we can kind of discuss through each level. In the tier one, two coaches.
It makes sense. There's only two coaches in college football that have a national title
with
to their
Nick
name.
Nick Saban retired and taking his litany with him.
And Jim Harbaugh.
Out, and no Les Miles. And you start going down the list, and it's like, oh, that's right. They've all left. That leaves Kirby Smart of Georgia and Dabo Swinney are the only current
college football coaches with a national title to their
name. With the exception of Mack Brown, who won it in the BCS division.
Yeah, that was so long ago that I don't think that's a counties, no counties.
Yeah, sure.
You're at North Carolina now, and not Texas,
no.
And it's been so long ago.
Yeah, got a fun little team.
20 years ago, none of the kids that you're recruiting right now were alive.
That's the insane thing.
When you won your national title. I think that is probably the clear indicator.
God, I hate that. But I agree with the list. Kirby and Dabo.
Yeah. Tier one, no-brainers.
Nobody
right
else is
now
above that.
But, I mean, I think we could see, though, if Dabo takes a step back, I think that gives you enough pause. And there's plenty of pause and hesitation on Cole Klubnik, their quarterback.
Mm-hmm. And their inability or unwillingness to use transfers.
And with what is Dabo Swinney without Tony Elliott running his offense and Brent Venables running his defense? Mm-hmm. We're now going to start to see these guys are cycled out. Again, Clemson is not a doormat by any means. They're not an easy out. But their reign of dominance, and it was a reign of dominance that Clemson had, they were so stinking good for so long. If you're not going to use the transfer portal, and they were the only team in college football outside of the service academies not to use the transfer portal. If you're not going to use it, you better win at a ridiculously high level. And if he does it again this year, then hell yeah, keep him up on tier one.
And then it becomes like, oh, they really are doing something different there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tier two, Ryan Day of Ohio State, Kalen DeBoer of Alabama, Luke Fickell of Wisconsin, Brian Kelly of LSU, Lance Leipold of Kansas,
yep,
Mike Norvell of Florida State, that might fall, Lincoln Riley of USC, and Kyle Whittingham of Utah.
Yeah, the one that sticks out to me in this that is kind of the outlier is Luke Fickell at Wisconsin. Now, one thing that all of these guys have done, with the exception of Kyle Whittingham and Kyle Whittingham and Lance Leipold are college football playoff coaches. Now, Mike Norvell didn't make it last year because Florida State got hosed. They went undefeated, but having an undefeated season, that's pretty good. Luke Fickell took Cincinnati to the college football playoff, and now he's been at Wisconsin. I think that might be your criteria of getting in there is taking a school like Cincinnati to the CFP. But at the same time, they got waxed.
When you think about it, it is a short list.
It's a very short list.
Of coaches who have been there. And then when you talk about coaches who have been there multiple times, Day, Kelly, Riley, in that list, those are the only ones?
Yep.
Yeah.
By the way, can you believe Kyle Whittingham is entering his 20th season at Utah?
Yes.
Yes, I absolutely can.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Because it feels like he's been there forever, and he has been there forever. He's been so good there.
Just think of, some of these coaches, too, that we're talking about the coaches that have gone to the college football playoff and won a title. The list is really short of guys who have actually just even been there, period, too, because even if you go back, like Jimbo Fisher, when he won at Florida State, no longer coaching. Mark Helfrich took Oregon to the playoff, not coaching. Mark D'Antonio at Michigan State, no longer there. And like it's a really short list of guys that have even gotten there. And I think that it kind of tells you the lightning in a bottle that Sonny Dykes caught at TCU year one, got him to the playoff and not in that second tier. His track record at Cal probably is what doomed him in that conversation.
So I thought it was an interesting list.
I think DeBoer and Lance Leipold deserve to be up in this tier. I know that some people would be like, but not with Kalen DeBoer and what he did at Washington. And Lance Leipold at Kansas is a phenomenal
to be able
coach.
To turn that program into a football program.
It was the worst college football program in the country.
Like Charlie Weiss left that thing in tatters, and then nobody followed through afterwards.
No, and you thought that it was going to be Les Miles, and you had fire Les Miles, and he never got that thing off the ground anyways. It was probably a good thing he got in all that trouble at LSU because it gave the golden parachute for Kansas to go out and find a guy like Lance Leipold, who's won everywhere he's gone. He's a Division III coach that is now running his way through the Big 12. And look, Kansas very well could be a college football playoff team if they win the Big 12 this year.
Which is
crazy. Ryan Day might see himself tumble off the tier very shortly.
Yeah, I mean, if they drop two games and one of those games is to Michigan and another one's a Big Ten title game, then pretty quickly. Yep. He isn't always inherited a great team. He's never had at Ohio State a bad team. So it's a little bit different, I think, against the other coaches. The tier three, I'm not going to name off everyone. I'm just going to couple of highlights. Jeff Brohm at Louisville. Mack Brown does make this list at North Carolina.
Yep.
Troy Calhoun at Air Force. You kind of look at Cristobal is on this list. Drinkovitz at Missouri. Sonny Dykes, like you mentioned, at TCU. Kirk Ferentz at Iowa. You scroll down, Mike Gundy, Lane
Kiffin. I'm surprised Kirk Ferentz wasn't a tier two bump.
Just because of much like Whittingham, where it's like continued greatness.
10 wins with the worst offense ever. But again, I guess tier two probably wouldn't have the worst offense ever.
Whittingham has managed to do it on the other side of the country and not have the worst offense ever. But you have Lane Kiffin, Josh Heupel, Mike Gundy, Chris Klieman at Kansas State, and then Dan Lanning at Oregon. And I'm a little surprised here, but again, if you're going to put the stipulation on that the next group up is tier two is making the college football playoff, then this is accurate.
And Dan Lanning's a third-year head coach. Like, we also have to keep that into perspective of what Lanning has done. Now, he didn't take over an absolute dumpster fire like Lance Leipold did at Kansas. The cupboards were not bare by any stretch of the imagination. He has an incredible record for his first two seasons, but the argument could be made of the best teams that he has played, he has lost to. Georgia, and then 3 to Washington. Okay, you get over that hump, you can get up into that tier two, and if Oregon has a season that many believe they will, he will be up in that second tier, and as will Steve Sarkisian, who took over another program that wasn't an empty cupboard when he took over Texas.
But they were in shambles.
They got to the college football playoff last year. He has stabilized themselves as being a recruiting power yet again. Sark, Lanning could very easily see themselves in the next tier up next year. Lane Kiffin, he could be a guy that he finds himself either going up or going down based on the results of this season, because it has been, it's a roller coaster with Lane, and he has a really good team. He is, if Deion wants to claim himself being the portal king, no. It's actually Lane Kiffin because of what he's able to do with the talent that he gets out of the portal and win a lot of football games that way. Mario Cristobal could see himself tumble pretty quickly. I think why we might see him, because game management has been a massive issue with Cristobal at Oregon and at the University of Miami. If he doesn't have a good year this year, he could bump down. And if he doesn't, it's because of his relationship he has with Bruce Feldman, who went to the University of Miami with him at the same time. You know, those guys are thick as thieves. We could see Cristobal taking a tumble down this list if they don't have a good year in a really down ACC this season.
There are 8 tiers on this list. Jake Dickert is in tier 6.
Is that, and this is young coach, bad spot, bad situation with the with the reorganization of the Pac-12 and trying to be in a conference that's just trying to survive. You don't really know, and the verdict is still out on Jake Dickert. I really like Jake Dickert, but tier 6, I don't think anybody's going to get upset about that, because if he wins a boatload of games playing a hybrid Mountain West schedule, yeah, well then you should probably say the dude has a little bit of staying power there and should work his way up.
The Bruce Lee of BS, Deion Sanders, also in tier 6.
Makes sense and could be way down.
And one that will, I'm sure, was just got Oklahoma fans just all kinds of tickled pink. Brett Venables is tier 5.
He's had a lot of talent. Men to mixed results. Oklahoma's going to be good this year, though. He has done a really good job of kind of reforming the identity of Oklahoma football from, you know, Lincoln Riley and Bob Stoops being an offensive, high-flying identity into defense, grit, old-school Oklahoma football, and they are positioning themselves to pop this season. And the results so far are not up to Oklahoma's expectations, because you could still recruit really well at a school like Oklahoma, and the expectation is you're in the college football playoff conversation. I think that's one thing that they do a really good job of in this list, is putting these coaches into tiers isn't just what the coach can do, but what are the expectations of your university as well?
Mm-hmm.
Because in that same tier with Venables in tier 5 is Brent Brennan at Arizona, right? Did a really good job at San Jose State, got them out of the dregs of, they were a bottom feeder in the Mountain West, and they were competitive in the Mountain West. Now he heads over to Arizona, where the expectations aren't very high, and he could see himself work his way up. Arizona might be a top 25 football team at the end of this season. Brent Brennan is a good coach, but the thing that he has done is he has surrounded himself with really bright offensive minds. And I'm just speaking from that side of the ball, because I know a few guys on that staff down there. Super bright coaches. I mean, and then he's accented those super bright coaches with pit bull recruiters too. The expectations aren't very high because of it's Arizona football, But Jed Fish gave them talent to work with. A lot of it left, but Noah Fifita, Tetrarel McMillan, those two guys stayed, and you're going to have a chance to win some games at Arizona. And Jed Fish, by the way, tier four at Washington, and I think rightfully so. He pops at Washington. They have a good year this year. They have a, and then they start building up their stacking recruiting classes.
And
Jed Fish could be a three or two guy. Oh, God. You're not lying, but that's... That sucks.
Oregon State and Trent Bray not listed, obviously, because he is not
He's a new coach in this, yeah.
He is not tiered in here anywhere.
Can't put the guys who haven't coached a game into a tier yet. I thought it was interesting we saw in tier seven, though, Justin Wilcox at Cal.
Yeah, that is a little interesting.
This is Bruce Feldman's quote on tier seven. I think Justin Wilcox is a good coach with a really rough job. Everything is such an uphill climb at Cal. I think if he was a head coach at Boise, he'd probably be a tier three guy. That is 100% true. Mm. And he, like, Justin Wilcox wanted a school with high academic requirements. Wisconsin is one of those.
Yeah.
And he really enjoyed his time at Wisconsin because you recruit a different kind of player. The uphill climb at Cal being so tough is the academic requirements and the athletic department being in financial ruin, being over $250 million in the red is never an enviable task for a head coach to look at. Brutal.
Tough place to be.
Tier 8, by the way, is all guys who are going to get fired. So, hot seat central. Tony Elliott at Virginia, Clark Lee at Vanderbilt.
I mean, does Don Brown get fired at UMass, though, because they suck no matter what?
Yeah, he should probably just rip that Band-Aid off, though.
I guess.
Yeah. It's an interesting thought process that they went through, though, on The Athletic, and go give it a read.
It's a long, in-depth read. Like, they have their justifications and reasoning behind basically everything.
And they said it. If Lanning goes to the playoff, he's a tier two guy.
Yeah, he's right up there.
Next year.
And then by defining the language, they cleared that up. But also, you have to kind of redefine it next year because there's eight more teams in the playoff now.
You're dang right.
So that list is going to grow naturally. All right, coming up next, we will pivot to baseball because there's plenty to talk about in baseball. The pace of Aaron Judge and Ohtani, a 50-50 season. But first, here's the Big Kahuna with a Sports Center update.
That's that Hawaiian burger joint.
I'm going to pivot to baseball for a little bit just because what's going on in the baseball world right now is not unprecedented because Barry Bonds exists, but you have two players in Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani that are doing things that people not named Barry Bonds have never done before. You and I were going through this before the show and laughing at how ridiculous Barry Bonds' 2004 season was.
Dude, that season, I don't care if he was on steroids, it was the most incredible baseball season of all time.
So for those that don't know, the 2004 season, when Barry Bonds was 39 years old, and it was one of his, what, seven MVPs? He finished the year with a .362 batting average, with a 60.9 on-base percentage, slugging .812 with an OPS of .1422.
Nuts.
1422, if you're wondering, that number, it's the largest OPS of all time. This is a guy who had 120 intentional walks and 41 strikeouts. So
goodness gracious.
Again, he hit .362.
Just think of, like, we revere, and Stephen Kwan, former Beef, he's having a fantastic year. He has 40 strikeouts.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of the hit-for-contact guys.
Yes.
He has a .302 average. So the game of baseball
is just so different.
Has changed more than any other sport that we have. And this includes, like, the game playing more outside in, less contact in basketball. The evolution of the offensive game in football and protecting quarterbacks and it becoming a more passing-friendly game. If you look in just a 20-year window, what baseball has done and how much baseball has changed, it is dramatically different as a sport than it was 20 years ago. Because it's not just the fact you have hitters and striking out is not a problem anymore. Hitting for contact is a thing of the past. You're going for doubles or dingers now. It is the fact that now pitching has changed. completely changed. More guys are throwing over 100 miles an hour than ever before. You have reliever after reliever, and baseball is now actively trying to change that because they're sitting there going, my gosh, we have so many pitchers and they're getting hurt because their bodies literally cannot hold up for multiple seasons of throwing over 100 miles an hour and having this much torque. Spin rate in the break of pitches has gone up exponentially over the last 20 years. And you go, it's a completely different way that the game is being played right now than it was before. We look back on this because of that year. You said Barry Bonds hit what, 362. Mm-hmm. In 2004.
Nobody in baseball comes close this year.
No, Bobby Witt Jr. is sitting like 347 now. He must have had a good day today.
He's already
played today. But you go, there are only, in Major League Baseball, entering today, there are only 8 players hitting over 300 in baseball.
and Barry Bonds is basically, okay, his starting lineup around him hit about 290.
There were 36 players in 2004 that hit over 300. There were, if you want to bump that down to 290, there were 57 players in 2004 that hit 290 for their batting average. This year in Major League Baseball, there are 16 players hitting 290.
Crazy. Absolutely crazy.
16.
That's, and you said, dramatic shift.
290 was basically the Giants roster then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a couple guys that were 16 under, but you had Bonds at 360. You had Grissom was like 298. Jeff Kent was, I want to say, like 320. Like they had the whole roster had hit for average and they didn't strike out.
It's wild.
One guy with 100 strikeouts.
But this year we're seeing Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani are doing
absolutely banana stuff. So this is a long roundabout way. If you're looking at your home run leaders right now, Aaron Judge is currently 51, Shohei Ohtani at 41. I've seen the Yankees push this as Aaron Judge is on pace to break his own record. The record they're talking about is the AL home run record. We are not going to acknowledge that. It does not exist. It is not real. It is not a home run record. Shut up, Yankees fans. It's stupid. But he's hit a lot of home runs, and he's been incredible. This point right now, he has got a 1.201 OPS, which is the highest OPS this far into the season since 2004, Barry Bonds.
It's nuts. And there's also a level of protection, and you mentioned how good the hitters were around Barry, but
it's not the same.
With this year and the way that baseball is being played now, good luck having the ability to walk Aaron Judge when you have Juan Soto there, too.
If you rank by OPS, Aaron Judge leads baseball at 1201. Second is at 1035, Juan Soto.
Juan Soto.
So
pretty incredible. Those two guys are a vicious 1-2 punch. And that just goes to show like how just flummoxing their pitching staff is.
Are you just saying just not good?
Well, starters are good, but their back-end bullpen is really bad.
Yeah.
They blow a lot of games. They have no business losing. And, I mean, they still lead the AL in wins.
Did you see the clip this weekend of the Bleacher Creatures chanting out re-sign Soto?
No, they need to.
So they did. And
throw that money at him.
It had a two box of Soto and Judge. And Judge kind of looked at him with like, huh? Huh? No. He's like gesturing to the crowd, gesturing to him like, you know, maybe you should.
Maybe we should do this.
And Judge got paid, so.
Yeah, Juan Soto should get paid too.
And Judge has been healthy. And again, the numbers that he has this year, 333 average, 51 home runs, 122 RBI, 106 walks with 135 strikeouts, which considering the power that he plays with is incredible. 333 average, 736 slugging, 1201 OPS. And it wouldn't even be Barry Bonds' worst MVP year.
Yeah. If you were to take this, so Judge, he can hit 60 home runs again this year. He's at 51.
He's on pace to hit 65.
If he gets to 65 home runs, that is an incredible season.
It's a top 10 season probably in Yankee history.
That does not even come close to touching what I think would be the most impressive feat that we have seen. Shohei Ohtani has 31 games left. he joined the 40-40 club over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
He could have a 50-50 season, the first one we have ever seen in baseball history.
Mm-hmm.
A 50-50 season, and then he, if he comes back next year and pitches again,
mm-hmm.
we could see quite literally the most dominant performance at the plate and running the bases, and a pitching career where he, what his career ERA is like 2.32.
Yeah.
The best baseball player ever.
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 And as much as Bonds is the best hitter of all time, which he is, it's stop. He's the best hitter in baseball history. Power, average, until his late career, run the bases. Like he's, Barry Bonds is the guy. Shohei, because he's pitching, goes to a whole other level. It's impossible to truly, like, what I love about baseball and base running coming back, your two steals leaders are Ellie De La Cruz, who's 6'6", 220, and Shohei Ohtani, who's 6'4", 230.
Yep.
This isn't Ricky. Mm-mm. These are just monster dudes who are just freaks.
Swiping bags, baby.
And the crazy thing is, Shohei's stolen 40 bases, only been caught stealing four times.
And look,
that's nuts.
This is exactly why making the bases bigger is a good thing for baseball, because prior to last season, right, the 40-40 club only had four members: Jose Canseco, Barry Bonds, Alex Rodriguez, Alfonso Soriano. The last person to do it was Soriano in 2006.
Good God.
Last year, Ronald Acuna, he had joined the 40-40 club. This year, Shohei Ohtani joins the 40-40 club, and we could see a 50-50 club. And the bases being bigger, it was a small change that could lead to big results in how much more fun the game is. More action all around the base pass, which goes back to this game has changed so much more than what we knew and what we saw just 20 years ago. It's crazy. If Ohtani gets to 50-50, floored.
Is that more impressive to you than if let's say, Judge finishes 330, 65, 140?
Yeah. I think it is, just because the ability to hit and swipe those bases. And look, I just think Shohei Ohtani, like as an all-around baseball player,
terrifying.
I'm in awe of him.
And again, Judge is at 122 ribbies right now.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
And look, Ohtani hitting 292 20 years ago, people were like, well, he's only hitting 292.
Like,
now you're like, oh, he's got top 15 batting average as well.
Mm.
Oh,
it's nuts.
Not bad.
All right, coming up, we'll wrap up today's show with a little fun with audio. Danny and Dusty, 1080 The Fan. It's one of those weird shows where in between breaks, I'm just like looking up random bits of history about Egypt because I've got ancient history stuff going on.
This is one of the weirder things that you've done here, Danny, is that you have turned the TV that you watch into the History Channel mm-hmm. TV. And you're watching a lot of Egyptian history and you're saying some pretty wild things that have zero context because the TV is behind my head. And you're like, why do they got a naked child there? Well, look at that naked kid. And I'm like, what?
It was a tapestry of an Egyptian Egyptian temple or pyramid. And this little person had a huge hog. It would, look, man, they did it in the drawing. It's a little person with a...
So, like, things like that are being said with zero context. With zero context here. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And then I look over, and you're rewinding the TV, so I have to see this hieroglyphic
of what I'm talking about.
Of this child. And I'm going,
what the hell is going on?
Yeah. So the U.S. Open's on TV right now, too.
You know what I'm not going to watch? What? Tennis.
Yeah, no.
What did I say when we started today's show?
They are going to force feed us U.S. Open tennis all week long. This is called football week.
I want no part of it.
No.
None. So it's either that or some gambling show. And so I'm like, screw this. I'm throwing on the History Channel.
I might be in on that.
Yeah, see?
Might be in on that.
It's a little bit of fun. Speaking of some fun, Rust, you told me you found this one of old Snoop-a-Loop.
Yes.
And it's just dumb and fun.
You're in this costume?
That's me inside of there. That's me inside of there. And that's me inside of there.
And do you wear this when you leave the party?
No, I stay him all night. Like, what happened was when I first started going to my grandkids' parties, the parents would rush me in. Oh my God, it's Snoop Dogg! Let me have a picture. So I had to figure out a way to take Snoop Dogg out of the party. So whatever the theme of the party was, I was gonna come as that, as the costume. As soon as the kids see me, oh my God, it's Buzz Lightworth or whoever I'm dressed as.
Buzz Lightworth, huh?
Yeah, fusing Buzz Lightyear and Mrs. Butterworth.
The pictures he is showing Jimmy Fallon on the Jimmy Fallon show on NBC, because Snoop got paid $9 million for Olympics coverage, and they're like, now that you're stateside, you have to go on all of our shows.
Yeah.
And he's like left shark. He was a giraffe. Mm-hmm. The little guys Toy Story aliens that are in the claw machine.
The claw. Mm.
He dresses up in like inflatable costumes when he goes to his grandkids' parties. And now I want Snoop Dogg to come to my birthday party in an inflatable. Absolutely. I mean, the costumes are high, and so is he.
I was going to say, how much do you think he's hotboxing that son of a gun?
Yeah, I have a feeling that is very true.
Get the vape going in there.
There is, I mean, I don't think that there is a person in American popular culture history that has changed their perception as much.
From Murder Was the Case to hanging out with Martha Stewart and little kids and the face of the Olympics.
Being the dad of the Olympics. No, nobody has done it better.
Do you think any of those kids know that he has had a murder rap?
No. No.
Like, they just have no idea, right? He's just that old rapper.
No, they don't know. They don't know. They don't know that people were trying to ban his music.
Running over several states. With steamrollers.
Yep. Yep. And his response, that's fine. You're buying my records.
Yeah.
And not to mention, he has grandkids.
Grandkids. Yeah.
God, Snoop's old enough to have grandkids.
All right. That'll do it for us today. Tomorrow, we got more football, baby. It's game week. This has been Danny and Dusty. Up next, 4 hours of power from their mouths to your ears. Prime time with Buck and Soup right here on The Fan.
Bye. Don't suck.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.